Welcome to the CEC Report. It's July 20th. I'm Robert Barwick, and I'm joined by CEC Leader Craig Isherwood. Welcome, Craig.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie.
In this week's CEC Report, first, LIBOR tentacles reach deep into Australia. Second, the treason dossier, the casino economy. And finally, HSBC, the British banking system is all drugs, drugs, drugs. So first, LIBOR tentacles reach deep into Australia. With the last couple of weeks, Craig, we've covered this LIBOR issue, which is a growing scandal. And what we want to do today is talk about how it has a definite and direct impact on the way the Australian financial system works.
Yeah, we want to flesh it out for people so they have an understanding of exactly what's at stake here. And we've done a fair bit of work, Robbie, going and discovering new organisations, I might add, and literally finding out the horrific horror show that there is in terms of the financial casino here in Australia.
No, exactly. So here's the point. The LIBOR scandal is not a blight on the financial system. It is the rotten core of a corrupt system. The Big Bang deregulation of the 1980s, when the global financial system was deregulated, especially in the Anglo-Saxon countries all around the world at once, led by Thatcher in Britain, was intended to do this. It was intended to steal from everybody. Mm-hmm. And of course, the LIBOR mechanism is central to the way that works.
Robbie, just for those who don't know what the LIBOR is, it's the London Interbank Offer Rate, which is a rate that's set in London by a bunch of banks coming together about 11 o'clock in the morning and making an estimate of what they think, or in their opinion, they should borrow money from or lend money to other banks.
Yeah, and so any changes in that have a ripple effect right through the world financial system. Also, Craig, its power has evolved with computer technology.
Yeah.
Because the size of the financial system now is a function of the way computers can do these really rapid trades. And so if you can rig this LIBOR, you're rigging the whole system.
Yeah, and you only need decimal changes to the fifth decimal point to make enormous amounts of money.
The latest figures, and this was quoted in the Australian Financial Review here this week, is that when this first erupted, that was said to be something like $300 trillion of derivatives affected. Well, they now know, a couple of weeks later, that it's over $250 billion, $1,000 trillion.
We're a bit late, Robbie. We've been talking about $1.4 quadrillion in this market, for this piracy for the last 5 years.
Exactly. What it means is the entire global derivatives bubble, which we have been screaming about, is over $250 billion, an unbelievable figure, is entirely infected by what this LIBOR thing's been doing. And so the whole system is...
Let's just put on the table for people that the part of that bubble here in Australia is $128 trillion. That's the sort of derivatives trading elements that we have here in Australia.
And that's 100 times Australia's GDP.
Yes. 100 times Australia's foreign debt too, which we'll come back to. But yep. I mean, you're talking massive amounts of fictitious... not fictitious, but...
fictitious.
Well, there is fictitious, yeah, it is. There's no underlying value to it.
No, of course. The other thing about this that is now starting to emerge is the corruption goes right to the top. It was known about at the top of the Bank of England, big surprise, and the US Federal Reserve.
And from what we've been reading, it was known implicitly by the people that set up market regulatory bodies down here.
Well, let's just talk about that now. So, okay, how does this affect Australia? Australia has a LIBOR equivalent, which is called the bank bill swap rate. So this is the rate that determines what our banks lend to each other here. And, of course, bank lending is a source of liquidity for the market. What banks are willing to lend to each other... every night banks have a surplus and they'll lend that out on an overnight. There's overnight lending, there's 1 week lending, there's 1 month lending, there's 3 month lending, etc., etc. And that allows banks to play around with all kinds of different investments, etc. So it's a source of liquidity. And in Australia, it's this bank bill swap rate. This mechanism here, the LIBOR equivalent, is overseen by... The LIBOR is the British Bankers Association. In Australia, they call themselves the Australian Financial Markets Association. The Reserve Bank of Australia is a member of this Australian Financial Markets Association, Craig. So this represents all the financial institutions in Australia. The mechanism for setting the rate, though, is different to the LIBOR, and they're hanging their hat on this. They're saying, hang on, don't panic. We are not as corrupt. We're not corrupt like the LIBOR because our mechanism is very different. And basically it is that whereas when they set the LIBOR every 11 o'clock every morning, they call around the 14 banks that provide the information. They say, what do you want it to be? That's really what was going on. In Australia, they say to those banks, what are you being charged?
Yes.
Right? And that's, so it's an actual rate.
It's based on the trade, they say, between the bank bills and the actual physical trade.
So, Craig, the way the mechanism is set, the BBSW mechanism is set, seems clear cut, right? They're saying this can't be rigged. However, here's the problem that the AFMA has. It's the same banks who are setting both the BBSW here and the LIBOR in England.
Mm.
You have to put your faith in the banks that have been shown to be corrupt. There's a panel of 14 banks in Australia, just like there's a panel of 14 banks in England. Six of that banking panel here are the same banks as the banks in England. More importantly, the AFMA has a market governance committee that oversees this. This is the actual overseer. These are the people who they say, trust us, this system has integrity. Two of the members of the committee are Barclays Bank and the Royal Bank of Scotland, and they're the only banks so far that have been found guilty in England of rigging the LIBOR. The rest are under investigation. These are the ones that have been found guilty. They are on the Market Governance Committee of the AFMA. And so this whole AFMA picture, though, what the AFMA is this body that oversees this enormous casino that's now the Australian economy. And as you said, it's $128 trillion market turnover. Most of that, these derivatives financial instruments, and you have a situation that when it's the banks who oversee themselves and they are the same ones in London exposed as corrupt, you are a fool. We are fools if we accept their reassurances and just take them on face value. So obviously we can't trust these guardians of the financial system one iota. But aside from any particular tricks they might be pulling in the BBSW, which we don't know, there is anyway an enormous amount of short-term foreign money, foreign debt that's saturating Australia that affects everybody. So tell the viewers what sort of money we're talking about there.
Well, this is a pretty sore point. It was in the Parliament in the last session, Robbie, because I heard lots of debate about it. Look, Australia's foreign debt is $1.373 trillion. That's a huge amount of money. It's about the same as Australia's GDP. But when you break that down, you get to the truth of the matter. Now, you've got this, there's two different types of debt that we refer to. One is public debt. That's basically debt made up from money borrowed from government, state governments, federal government, and the Reserve Bank, central bank. So that's public debt. And then you've got all the rest is private debt. Now, of that $1.37 trillion, $297 billion of that is public debt. And the problem with that is that this has increased from $119 billion in 2008-2009, just as the GFC broke, up to that $297 billion. So there's a 202% increase in the government's public debt overseas. But it's really the private debt we're concerned about, because the balance, if you take the public debt out, you've got just over $1.07 trillion is private debt. And $782 billion of that is in financial institutions. Now,
so that's the banks who owe that.
The banks and other financial institutions and so forth, yeah, but principally the bank. So when you look at that money that more closely, though, nearly half a trillion, or $513 billion of that $782 billion is in what's called short-term debt, less than 1 year, right? So that means that the banks have to refinance that within 1 year. And if you go down even further, you'll find that there's $360 million,
billion dollars,
that's less than 90 days.
So they're rolling that over all the time.
46% of the foreign debt of the banking system has to be rolled over every 90 days.
And this short-term rolling over money, this is the interbank lending market. Our banks are knee-deep or up to their necks, really, probably is a more accurate way of putting it, in the whole LIBOR system, in
other words. And look, the point with this overseas borrowing is that this is intimately tied up now with the derivatives market. You know, derivatives are financial mechanisms that have been invented to try and save money, of all things, right? The point is that the majority, one of the majorities of the derivatives trading, speculative trading in our country, is foreign exchange dealings. So this is where you get into the question of the BBSW / LIBOR. It's a murky grey area because it's all unregulated. It's over the counter, which means it's off the balance sheets of the banking, the private. And look, this is such a murky area.
Don't slander them, Craig. It's regulated. It's self-regulated.
Yeah, that's the problem.
The best kind of regulation.
The ring fencing of the banks in England is a classic, you know, which is why there have been calls for Glass-Steagall now from the highest levels of the British oligarchy. I mean, Lord Myer? Is it Lord Myer or Lord Rayner?
Lord Miners,
I was right the first time. Peter Hambrough and so forth, of course. These are the representatives of the financial oligarchy that actually have the expertise within the British, within the oligarchy, because the oligarchy sort of has a division of labour. These people are experts in their field, and they're saying to the rest of the oligarchy, if we don't go with a Glass-Steagall and go back to a regulated system and get rid of this debt, we're finished like the rest of the other countries, you know, rest of Britain as well.
Because as much as they'd like the short-term profits, when they're recognising that the system's parasitical and it's starting to eat itself, this is why LaRouche said, this is not a scandal, it's a funeral.
Mm.
This LIBOR thing is the funeral of the system, and those guys recognise that. Now, we'll leave this touching on Australia and LIBOR directly there because of the time factor. But when we come back, we're going to talk about it a bit more in a different context, which is an update on the treason dossier series we're doing, Craig, on how Australia became a casino economy. Welcome back to the CEC Report. So now, the treason dossier, Australia's casino economy. The question is, how is Australia exposed to this mess, this cesspool of corruption in the first place? Well, as we've gone through in a series of these treason dossiers in the last few months, Craig, it's the same old, same olds. Macquarie Bank, John Howard, John Hewson, Bob Hawke and Paul Keating, and the people that have come after them. Keating's deregulation of the Australian economy coincided precisely with this big bang we talked about. Thatcher led it in Great Britain directly under the direction of the Mont Pelerin Society, the British Crown's Economic Warfare Unit, which was the revival of 1930s fascism after World War II. It was done in Australia. It was done in New Zealand under Roger Douglas. They called it Rogernomics. It was done in America under Reaganomics. And in America, you had the Michael Milken and the explosion of junk bonds. You had any bars to the whole scale of looting of the economy were taken away, right?
And that really started, Robbie, in the August 1971 period when Nixon deregulated the US dollar, took it off the gold system, and therefore you had an open casino economy.
Well, when they sent an army of hitmen around the world to literally smash every bit of regulation and protection that got in the way of their ability to steal from the economy.
Yeah.
And in Australia, it really took off with Keating. Keating talked about how he wanted Australia to transform from being an industrial economy to being the Wall Street of the South. That's what he put it. And his mate that he loves so much, that loves him so much, David Love, the author of this book, Unfinished Business, Paul Keating's Interrupted Revolution that we've quoted here a lot, his view of it was that this Australia could become the Antipodean and Venice, and Venice being the monetary empire of the Middle Ages that dominated Europe by virtue of controlling banking. Australia was going to have that vision. Now, on this AFMA that we've talked about, the Australian Financial Markets Association, that effectively is the realisation of that dream. The financial markets, $128 trillion in turnover in Australia, that's huge now. Very prominent on this AFMA is Macquarie Bank. Now, one of its directors is Richard Shepherd. And Richard Shepherd is a Macquarie Bank director who's a big wheel in Macquarie Bank. He goes back to its Hill Samuel days in 1975 because Macquarie Bank started in Australia as a subsidiary of the City of London Bank, Hill Samuel, which is a very, very powerful, well-connected bank. In 2010, one of the original Hill Samuel troika, Craig, whose name is Mark Johnson, who was one of the three guys who set up Hill Samuel in Australia, he led a a report. He chaired a report called Australia as a Financial Centre.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Keating Wall Street of the South idea. Now, I want to give you a quote from EIR. EIR's economics editor, John Hofel, and just puts Macquarie Bank in context. Back in 2008, we put out a press release saying Macquarie Bank are gone, bunny, and we stand by that, even though Macquarie Bank's still going. People can ask us why. But anyway, just listen to his characterisation of Macquarie. Quote, any Australian who expected Macquarie to survive the British game is being played for a sucker. Macquarie is the Australian version of Enron, both sent on kamikaze missions by the British to act as battering rams to further their imperial control. Like Enron, Macquarie will not survive the process, but its masters will be able to pick up the pieces at pennies on the dollar. Macquarie is just a tool to push privatisation using money from the financial bubble to buy control of physical assets, control which will pass to Macquarie's controllers once Macquarie collapses. It is already dead, whether it realises it or not. And this battering ram idea is the key. Now, Macquarie literally directed everything Paul Keating did. Whether Paul Keating knows it or not, but of course he does know it. And we've highlighted here before superannuation, and I want to give a quote from David Love's book just to show you how blatant it was, right? So page 82 of Unfinished Business. This is how Love characterises Macquarie in the 80s. Macquarie was on its way internationally. It was hardly a household name, but among those whose business it was to judge these things, Macquarie was a real comer, not only in Australia but in the world. From the Manchester Bypass in England, a toll road, Macquarie, by this time under the aegis of a newly created division called Macquarie Infrastructure Group, quickly spread its toll roads and tunnelling business to South Korea, Canada, Indiana, Chicago and San Diego. So they gave the world the joy of toll roads. And the next line, Paul Keating's superannuation reforms would feed the Macquarie machine with the investment funds it needed to grow and prosper. And of course, that's what we've said here. Superannuation was a big scam entirely to do that. But they were creating a pool as part of a casino that these guys could draw out to loot in Australia. All right. It was Hill Samuel that directed the original blueprint, the Campbell Report, that Keating was able to follow to do his work. John Hewson was their key guy in setting up the Campbell Report, and of course John Hewson later worked for them. The executive director of the AFMA until this year, let me give you a profile on him. His name is Duncan Fairweather. He's also connected to Macquarie through Hewson. When Hewson was, he was a Macquarie Bank executive director until he became a member of parliament in 1987.
John Hewson was.
And this Duncan Fairweather was his chief of staff. And on the ABC's website, The Drum, an Andrew Elder noted about Fairweather, quote, Fairweather was and is one of a small, low-profile group of people who moved between business and government with a solid, high-level understanding of both, end quote. And then everything that came out of this little cabal and combine, this post-1983 consensus between both sides, has systematically turned Australia into a casino. It's national competition policy, something else Macquarie designed, forced governments, Craig, to function as businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And now all the governments, and you highlighted in those
local
debt figures,
local
governments, state governments, the federal governments, all heavily in debt, often overseas, and they're at the mercy of the financial markets like everybody else, whereas they've got, under the Constitution, they've got their own banking powers, and it's all suppressed. Nobody ever uses that. This is all as a result of this. And consequently, we are now the Wall Street of the South. This AFMA has over 140 financial market members. You've got the $128 trillion in turnover. In the largest state in Australia, New South Wales, the largest industry is financial services, not farming or whatever anymore. And the Australian dollar is the third most traded currency in the world. Craig, we're out of time, but I've got a quick question for you. How would this crowd feel about Glass-Steagall?
Robbie, looking at the figures in this report, 88.5% for my estimates as pure speculative activity. Now, the Glass-Steagall means re-regulation. It means the end of speculative activity. It's going to mean bringing down this industry in a big way and going back to productive activity.
That's a big haircut, 88%.
It's a big haircut.
All right, we've covered a lot of information there, but we'll get into more later. Now, when we come back, we'll talk about the HSBC. Welcome back to the CEC report. Finally today, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, the British banking system is all drugs, drugs, drugs. Now, Craig, a month or so ago, it was revealed that the Queen of England's own bank, Coutts & Company, had been caught out money laundering, drug money laundering into South America. At the time, it was, it's not that they were money laundering, it's that the money was being laundered through their banks because they didn't have good enough controls. They were lax. Now, an even bigger deal, one of the biggest banks in the world, the biggest British bank, HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, has been found by the US Senate, a US Senate investigation led by Senator Carl Levin, laundering money, but lots of it. And what they were doing is, HSBC is one of only 30 banks in the world that has a license to physically ship US dollars. They can move US dollars around. And they were, under the cover of that license, bringing in drug money from Mexico, Bangladesh, and Saudi Arabia, at least. And of course, Mexico is the center of the world drug trade at the moment. Now, here's the thing. These two banks in a row, it's not just that it's a pattern of British banks. This is precisely what EIR and Lyndon LaRouche blew the whistle on way back in 1978. Yeah. It was in 1978... HSBC, specifically that bank, was trying to take over a regional bank in New York, and LaRouche's organisation campaigned to stop it on the grounds that it was a drug money bank, right? And then that was what led the following year to the printing of the book Dope Incorporated, on the British Empire's global drug trade. And in that time, I think there's been three different editions of Dope Inc. come out, right? Which is has had a big effect. It's driven the British Empire nuts. It's the book that is the cause of the slander against LaRouche that LaRouche says the Queen pushes drugs. That's what they reduced it to. What LaRouche was saying, he never actually said it like that. He was saying that the British system is a system, the British imperial monetary system is based on the world's drug trade. Now, very interesting, Craig. We talked about it here last week or the week before. This puts Barack Obama's Fast and Furious in a new light because his government was gun-running to the worst cartels in the world in Mexico. And the question is, were they doing that now to boost the drug trade upon which the entire City of London financial system, to whom Obama is indebted, is based? So this might be surprising to some people, but Craig, my question to you is, these revelations are only surprising if you don't know the history of the British Empire.
Well, people say the British Empire doesn't exist. Well, it exists in the form of this banking system, like we've said before, a monetarist empire. Go back into history. You see the slave trading run by the British East India Company, which became basically the British Empire. You're looking at the opium trade into China. You're looking at all this, a very similar activity as today, but it's in the banking system. Without a compliant banking system, you know,
It can't exist.
And what you'll find is that if you were to have a Glass-Steagall, a regulated banking system controlled by governments for the purposes of protecting the physical economy of actual economies and for the development of those economies for the people, and you wipe out the speculative activity, you have to wipe out the drug trade as well.
Yep.
So the two go hand in hand. So when people talk about there hasn't been an effective war on drugs, what they're saying about is that we want to protect the banking system. You can't have a war on drugs without having a Glass-Steagall. There's no way of doing it because of the enormous amounts of drug money flows that you've seen, particularly as which has happened with HSBC.
No, exactly. All right, well, we've run out of time today. We've covered a lot in a short period of time. Go onto our website and order material and give us a call. But thanks for tuning in.